Okay, they're passing out an outline. For those of you who do not know who I am, I'm Jackie Stanford. We've been in the church. I've been in this church for 18 years now. So been here for a little while. We were across the street when I originally first came here, so it's been a little while. We're just going to kind of walk through some things here concerning finance and what it's all about. The title is Honoring God in Insurance and Investments. And we're just going to kind of walk through it. Because we've got a small group here, you can stop anywhere along the way and just ask, shout out, do whatever you want to do. Raise your hand. I don't care. Just ask questions. A little bit about my background. I was born a poor black child. Some of you will figure out what that move's from. That would be the jerk. I don't have the answers for you like Charlie does. Charlie is my answer guy. That would be the jerk for those of you who have never seen it. I was not born a poor black child. I was born in Louisiana, though, and grew up there and got out of high school and decided I didn't want to live in a little small town that we had grown up in and wanted to get out. And so I joined the service, spent 3 years in the service, came back and went to college and got my degree in physical education, kinesiology, and history. And so that qualifies me to talk about finance. And for the next 10 years, I was a football coach. I spent 10 years as a high school football coach, 5 years as an assistant coach, and 5 years as a head coach. And during that period of time, I realized we began to have multiple children. I had to do something to help make a living. And so I was interested in things concerning finance, things like that, so I started studying those things and began taking tests, things like that, and so started doing it part-time. Selling insurance, investments, things like that. After 10 years of coaching, I got out and started doing it full-time. And for the next 7 years, that's what I did. Insurance, securities, all types of investments. Moved out here in 1988 to continue doing it. Much bigger market, all those kind of things like that was my thought process. Got out here in 1990, 91, 92, Hillary became president. And when she did, she came out with a thing called universal health care, and universal health care scared insurance companies to death. And when I say to death, they called us on a Wednesday and said, we will no longer issue any more health insurance policies. We had about 200 guys at that time working for us, selling insurance and investments, and the tool that we used to get in the door was health insurance. And they literally told us we were going to be out of business in a month, so we had to do something. And at that point in time, I said, I've had enough of this. I'd been doing it for about 7 years at that time. I want to go out on my own. And so I went out on my own and started working with seniors, and that's what I've been doing for the last 18 years. All I do now is work with seniors in Medicaid eligibility. The background that I have in insurance and investment, of course, helps me concerning that, but I don't sell any products now. I don't sell securities or insurances or anything like that. And so really, for those of you who know a little bit about it, I'm what's called a fee-based person. In other words, I sit down with them and say, here's how much it's going to cost for me to show you what to do, and they pay me. And sometimes they pay me, and sometimes they don't. All right. The topics we're going to cover here tonight are three things. First one is, what happens if you live too long? In other words, if you just keep living, what's going to happen to you? What's going to happen to you if you die too soon? What's going to happen then? What happens to your estate? What happens to everything that you have if you die too soon? And then last, what happens to your estate at death? And so we'll cover all three of these. The first one we're going to cover is what happens if you live too long. And so if you live too long, the thing we're concerned about is that we will run out of money. In other words, you get too old to work, what are you going to do then? And so how do you retire? And we title it Investing for Retirement. The first question that I really thought is, how much do I need? You know, if I'm sitting down now and say, all right, I want to retire at whatever the age is, then I've got to have some type of a number to shoot for. How much would you think would be enough for someone to retire with a modest type income, not living, you know, extravagantly or anything like that? How much would you think a person would need now in order to do that? And it's your guess. It's just a guess. $5 million? Okay. It's just a number. $5 million. Nobody else has a guess. I mean, there is no number. In other words, you can't open a book and it says, okay, you're 50 years old and here's how much you're going to need to retire. A lot depends on your life circumstances, all those type things like that. The number that most people use today is $1 million. you need to have at least $1 million when you retire. Now, for some of you, that may seem like there's no way in the world we'll ever have $1 million. And for some of you, you may look at that and go, well, yeah, I would expect to have more. As Drew said, I'd expect to have more like $5 million. There has to be a number there. In other words, there has to be something that you're going to say, this is how much I'm going to need. You know, the old saying is, if you aim at nothing, you hit nothing. And so there needs to be a number out there. That's the number that you're shooting for. I want to have this much money. Whatever this much is, you need to decide that. Now, of course, we've got guys in here. We've got girls in here. Some of you, believe it or not, will actually probably get married someday. Most of you probably will. And so your roles are going to be different. In other words, the husband is going to be the one who's going to be establishing this, aiming us this way. The wife is to come alongside and help us get there. In other words, through all of the things that go on in the family, you're going to help make these decisions and come up with these numbers. So you need to have some idea of what's going on. Now, the next one we ask is, how much will I need to earn on my money? Now, the question here that we're really looking for is, your money is going to grow. And when it grows each year, you want it to grow at a certain percent. I had my mother-in-law call me the other day, and I've been dealing with her for, we've been married for 30-something years, and I've been knowing her for almost 40 years now. And as she's gotten older, she's gotten a little more difficult to deal with. We'll just say it that way. And she called me, and she said, oh, the economy, my goodness, what are we going to do? And I said, I don't know what we're going to do. She said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I'm going to get up tomorrow, and I'm going to go to work. And she said, well, no, what are we going to do about gas prices, and what are we going to do about this? And I said, well, I really hadn't been paying attention. She is terrified of that. She watches Fox News 24 hours a day, and she's terrified of what's going to happen. Because she says, well, do you think I could take my money out of the stock market where she hasn't invested? And do you think I could get 8% of my money, couldn't I? And I said, well, nowhere that I know of could you. Not guaranteed. She was talking about like a CD. And I said, well, no, I don't think there's any CDs paying 8. She said, well, what about 6? And I said, no, I don't think there's any paying 6. Got on the computer, of course, 3-4%. When you look at long term, what happens to us is we get caught up in traps here. And when I say caught up in traps, you'll start reading articles and you'll read brochures and someone will say, well, this has averaged 12% for the last 25 years and this has averaged 8% for the last 14 years. I had a couple that came in to see me about a week or so ago, and their investment guy in Denver, Colorado, had told them this life insurance plan they had had been averaging 14% every year they had had it. And I just glanced at it very quickly and said, well, 14% of what? And they said, what do you mean? I said, well, you've got a life insurance plan. You have to pay for it every year. Someone has to pay for that. You're paying for it, right? And they said, well, no, we don't pay for it. It pays for itself. That doesn't happen. We'll come to that just a bit later on. Well, when you really put the numbers to it, it wasn't 14% as he had said. It was more like 4% is what it had been growing at. And so when we say how much is your money going to earn, most people would say that you're going to earn probably somewhere around 6 to 8% on your money. Somewhere around 6 to 8% is a pretty conservative investment over a long period of time. There will be periods of time where you will earn more. There will be periods of time where you will earn less. So 6 to 8% is usually a pretty good gauge to look at. So if your money's going to earn, you need $1 million, and it's going to earn 6 to 8%, how much am I going to need to save? There again, theoretically, how much would you think you'd need to save? In a lump sum, if you just put some money away and it was going to be there for 40 years, how much would you need to put one time for it to grow to $1 million, say at 6%? What do you think? How much money would it take? And you're just guessing. You have no idea. 40 years. $20,000, $40,000, $100,000, $200,000. Come on, give me a number. Just throw a number. 10,000. Thank you very much. No, you're not correct. Say 40 years, one time, at 6%, take you $97,000. If you put $97,000 somewhere and it earns 6% every year for the next 40 years, however old you are, 40 years from now, it would be $1 million. You never had to put another dime with it. You just put $97,000. Now, notice the difference here. If you put it at 8%, what does it do? Cuts that in half. Literally cuts it in half. And so, needless to say, you want to try to get that interest rate up there as much as you can. Just 2 percentage points, and it goes from $97,000 to $46,000. It becomes a little more imaginable. There may be a time when we actually could put 46,000 somewhere. 97,000, I just don't know if we could ever do that. Well, what if we did it systematically, though? What if we did it... what if we did it, like I said, the first time I've ever done this? How much do I need? $1 million. We're going to start all over again. Here we go. So what if we did it monthly? If we did it monthly, what would happen then? 6% every month, $524 a month. If we took $524 and we put it away somewhere, anywhere that earned 6% every single month, in 40 years, we'd have our $1 million. Now, as I said earlier, you may look and go, well, there's no way in the world I'll ever have $97,000. But there may be a way I could save $500. What happens if we get just 2 points more? $300. Just a little over $300 is what I need to save. So now we're getting more in the range of, you know, we might can do that. We might can actually do that. And so these are the type of things you take into the marriage. These are the type of things that you're thinking of. Because what happens is you get into the marriage and you go, well, there's no way we'll ever save up any money. We'll never have any money. But then you get thinking, oh, wait a minute, that guy said we could save, if we just save $300 a month at 8%, we'd have $1 million in 40 years. We can do that. And those are the type of things that you keep reminding yourself of and you think of. Now, so as we look at retirement and investing, where do I invest? When you start talking about where do I invest, really you're talking about people. In other words, how do I know where to put my money? You know, I can do a lot of things. I can go out and hire a professional. I understand when I say hire a professional, not necessarily do you have a fee-based person where someone would actually come in and say, here's what you should do, and my fee for telling you how to do that is going to be X number of dollars. Most of the time, the fee will come from commissions from whatever it is they're showing you how to invest the money in. You need to understand that most all investments have commissions that are paid to the person who is selling this to you. And that's how the professional makes his living. Nothing wrong with him making his living that way. Made my living that way for a while. Nothing wrong with that. As long as he knows what he's doing. If he doesn't know what he's doing, then there's something wrong with that. But understand, some investments will have front-end loads on them, some will have back-end loads, some will have loads throughout the time that they're going. There are all types of different investments that the professional can show you, and we'll come to some of those here in just a moment. The second thing you can do, instead of hiring a professional, is you can do it on your own. Because of the invention of the Internet, and this is one of those things that as much as anything got me out of what I was doing, because I began to understand that people really didn't need me. Certainly I did provide a service to them, but if they were willing to work some on their own, they could do a lot of it on their own. Now here's the problem. What happens many, many, many times is you as a man, you ladies as a woman, your husband sets up here and says, I can do this on my own. And he just kind of does it blindly and says, we're going to put our money here. And he has no idea really why he's putting his money there. He hasn't really researched it. He hasn't really done anything. He's just putting his money there because grandpa did. Or he's putting his money there because his dad did. Or he read somewhere where so-and-so did this. And so he thinks it's a good idea, but he really hasn't researched it. If you're the type of person who does not research things, or if you're married to the type of person who does not research things, if you get married in the future, I mean, professional, professional, professional. Get you a professional. Get you someone that knows what they're doing instead of relying on guesswork, opening a book and taking the top 10 hits. The other thing you could do is where do I invest is in your home. One of the first investments that you will make is in your home. Hopefully, that investment will appreciate in value. It will actually go up in value. It won't depreciate. Now, our market here in Texas has done very well, even during all the foreclosures and things that are going on. It's not that way everywhere else in the country. But your home is a great, great, great investment. And needless to say, some places are better than others. This will have a lot to do as you get older and begin to move into the job market as to where you live, because housing, say in Texas, costs a whole lot less than it does in California or up in the Northeast or somewhere like that. And so you have to be aware of those type of things. But one of the investments, of course, that you can make is in your home. Another one you can make is in mutual funds. Now, let me explain mutual funds very, very quickly. This is not a class on mutual funds. Mutual funds are very simple. What they do is diversify your investment. Most people, if you have $300 a month, You're not going to take $10 and go over here and put it in Walmart stock, $10 and go over here and put it in IBM, and $10 and go over here and put it in Exxon, and just keep doing all those and buying stock in each one of those different companies with $10. Number one, they're not going to let you do that. But you're not going to take the time to do that. That's what a mutual fund does. Putting it in a nutshell. A mutual fund takes your money and diversifies it over a variety of different types of investments. Now, there are many, many different types of mutual funds. There are what's called bond funds, which are money-type funds, which are funds where they are backed by some type of an obligation, whether it be the federal government, whether it be a municipality or whatever. There are what's called growth funds, where they're investing more in stock. There are foreign funds. There are gold funds. There are metal funds. There are funds just to have funds. I mean, you'll see them. There are funds out there that they will not invest in any company that invests in partial birth abortion. They won't invest in any companies that have anything to do with that. There are funds out there that won't invest in any company that has anything to do with alcohol. There are funds out there that will do that. And so you can get into mutual funds, and the sky is kind of the limit. Okay? Now, I'm going to come up with some suggestions of what to do here in just a moment. We're talking about where you can invest your money. Stocks, you can invest it into individual stocks. The thing that happens with individual stocks is there is a tremendous chance for growth. There's a tremendous chance for what's called appreciation. But you also need to understand there is a chance for depreciation. Thank you very much. If it can't appreciate, it can also depreciate. Okay? And so when you're in an individual stock, you have to be aware of that. Whereas if you're in a mutual fund and one of the stocks does bad, you're in 50 different companies, well, it's offset by one of the other companies that didn't do so bad. And so that's the idea behind it. Last one would be in real estate. And when I say real estate, I'm talking about ventures. Real estate, whether it be commercial-type real estate, whether it be residential where you're buying houses, rent houses, or buying houses to speculate or whatever. And usually what I've kind of done here is to say, this is where you start, and as your portfolio builds and as you get older, this is where you begin to go. In other words, when you start, most people probably need a professional. According to what your parents did or what your parents' background is, if they're any help or not, as far as how to invest your money, you probably need a professional helping you to do that. And then as you become older, become more understanding of it, you move on your own, you start investing in your home, you start putting money in your mutual fund, and you just keep going from there. And so these are just some ideals of where you can invest the money. Now, not going to make me do all this again, are we? Come on, Megan. Systematically, how do I invest? That's the next one. How do I invest? The most important thing I can tell you is, as far as investing goes, if you'll do it systematically, it's just like the church. If you'll give to the church systematically, if you'll invest systematically. In other words, it doesn't matter if it's $25 a month, it's $25 a month. That's what I'm investing, okay? I'm going to invest it systematically, and I'm going to do it every single month, no matter what. It may mean that I can't put gas in the car. Well, okay, we're not going to go this month because we don't have gas in the car. When you get married, you'll understand those kind of things. Next thing is emergency fund. You're going to invest systematically, and the first thing you're going to build up is what's called an emergency fund. Most people agree that the emergency fund you should have is 3 months of your income. 3 months of your income. So, using a number, if your income is $1,000 a month, that means you should have $3,000 in an emergency fund. That's a fund that you can go get your money out of at any point in time. That would be something like a money market account, a savings, just a passbook savings account, a credit union savings account, where your money is just there so that you can go get it at any point in time if you need it. But it is only for emergencies only. Now, here's what I would suggest to you is that the emergency fund is just for that. It's for emergencies only. But until I get that $3,000 or whatever 3 months of my income adds up to be, until I get that, there are no color TVs. We're not going to go buy a new color TV. We're not going to go buy a new car. We're not going to go buy a new dress. We're not going to go buy new shoes, even more important. We're not going to do any of those things until we get that money built up in there. Now, once we get that $3,000 in, yes, we can go and we can splurge and we can buy that new flat screen that we just got to have because everybody else has got one, and we got to have one. But not until I get that emergency fund built up. We're going to have to hurry. All right, the third place you would want to, of course, invest would be through work. Most companies now, unless you're self-employed, have some type of a work plan, either 401k, 403b, profit sharing. They have stock purchases all within the company. That would be the first place that you should start. Most of the companies that you can work for will match you. When I say match you, if you put in $100, they'll put in something. Now, they will not necessarily match you dollar for dollar, but they'll match you. You put in a dollar, they'll put in 50 cents, or they'll put in 10 cents, or whatever. They'll put something in. Well, you understand, you just made money on your money. No matter if it makes interest or not, or no matter if it grows or not, you've made some money if they're matching you. Now, of course, in saying those things, and I'm not going through everything here because we just don't have time, you need to make sure about things like vesting, how long do you have to be there before you can get the money out, things like that. That's really important to know, but we're not going to cover all that. IRA. An IRA is an individual retirement account. Now, here's what you need to get into your mind. Pretty much any type of investment that you can think of can be an IRA. Any type of investment. When I say any type of investment, a CD at the bank could be an IRA. A mutual fund could be an IRA. Or some stocks that you could buy through some investors that could be an IRA. There could be real estate, actually, ventures that you could go into that could be an IRA. There's pretty much not any type of investment that you can do that couldn't be an IRA. Now, all the IRA does is it allows your money to accumulate tax-deferred. There again, that probably doesn't mean anything to you right now, but as your money starts accumulating, it will mean something to you because you don't want to have to be paying taxes on it. Now, of course, what's happening now is all the people that started doing the IRAs back in the 60s, 40 years have passed. Well, guess what's happening now? 40 years, they've been doing this systematically. That $1 million is coming here. The IRS, Congress, knew that. So what happens, of course, is now you've got to pay taxes on it. When you take the money out of an IRA is when it's taxable. And so the money accumulates non-taxed, and then when you take it out at the end, hopefully when you're in retirement and your income is less, then it's taxable at that point in time. Now, as I said, you know, stop anywhere along the way. I get to rambling, and you can kind of wave and say, whoa, I don't know what you're talking about. So with an IRA, money's going to accumulate, not having taxes paid on it. You will pay taxes on it when you take it out, which will be 59 and a half or older without penalty. If you take it out before you're 59 and a half, you have to pay a penalty on it to the IRS. Last would be non-IRA accounts. And so what you've done is you're just walking through the cycle here. You've got that systematic investment started. You've got that emergency fund. All right, now we've got the emergency fund. What are we going to do now? Okay, I'm investing through work. Okay, I'm investing through work. What am I going to do now? Well, I'm going to do my IRA so I can reduce my taxes so we'll have more money. If I've maxed out my IRA and put all I can put in there, then that leads me to non-IRA accounts. In other words, any type of investment that's a non-IRA. Now, we're back up to mutual funds, stocks, all those things like that we talked about in the last section. Suggested resource. This is probably the best resource that I could suggest to you to go to. You can go to the website, and you can just play around on the website. It's called Sound Mind Investing, and it just has some great tools on there. You can play with numbers on there. You can get on there and say, you know, here's what I've got this much to invest. Here's how much it'll grow. What do you suggest? They will actually give you suggestions on there. In other words, if you want to know places to put your money, I mean, they will give you specific funds, the Evergreen Fund, put your money here. And they will tell you different places to invest your money, whether to put it in the foreign stock markets, whether to put it in gold, whether to put it in other type precious metals, things like that. They will make suggestions to you. So it is a great tool. But understand, that's what it is. It is a tool. Number one, if you don't use it, it's not going to help you any. Okay? So you've got to use it for it to be a help. And it's not the Bible. Okay? It's not the only answer there is. There are many, many out there. This is just one tool that you could use concerning that. All right. So investing for the future. If you live too long, you better have some money saved up. We've suggested $1 million. We said, here's how to get there. Here's some places to put it. And here's some a place to go there. Anybody got a question about investing money? We're going to move real quick. Time is running. I guess I was supposed to say time is money. Wasn't I? What happens if you die too soon? Well, if you die too soon, you'd better have some life insurance. Now, let me explain something here before we get too far with this. When I say that you'd better have some life insurance, you have to understand what life insurance is for. Life insurance has a purpose, and it is a specific purpose. And so, it is a replacement of income. Now, we're going to be real straightforward here. If one of you were to pass away, mom and dad would be real upset, your friends would be real upset, all the church would be real upset, all those kind of things like that. But as far as your financial future is concerned and who you're responsible for, nobody cares. You don't have to replace any income, right? I mean, your income is not helping the family stay afloat, I'm assuming, right? Wherever, if you're working at all. If you're working at all, it's probably not helping the family. The only time you need life insurance is if you need to replace of your income. You're responsible for something or someone. You're married. You have debt. Okay. In other words, if you had debt, you wouldn't want someone to assume your debt, so you have insurance to cover those type things. That would be the purpose then of life insurance, is to replace income. Now, here's what you've got to keep in mind. You have to bury that somewhere in there. Because what happens with insurance is, insurance, in most cases, is sold to people. That means a salesman who is very, very good at doing what he does sells it to you. So you've got to keep that in mind. What is insurance for? It's a replacement of income. So you keep that in mind. No matter what that insurance guy says, it is a replacement of income and to cover debts. I go out and buy a $200,000 house. Well, I need to have some life insurance to make sure that house is paid for so my wife will have someone to live in case something happens to me. She can't pay the note. And so we have insurance to do that with. That's the purpose of insurance. That's what it's for. It's to replace and cover those. And then lastly, once you begin to have children, it's to pay for college for kids. You understand, as soon as your children are born, I'm assuming most of you will be like we were, we had no money in savings for that child's college at that point in time. If something had happened to me, forget it. I mean, they weren't going, or we weren't going to pay for it anyway. And so I had to have some life insurance, so in case something happened to me, the children would still be able to go to college. And so those were the purposes of life insurance. That's what life insurance is for: replacement of income, cover all debts, college for kids. If you will keep that in your mind, you'll be better off than probably 70-80% of the people out there. What it's not for: insurance is not for investment. Let me say that again. Insurance is not for investment. Insurance is not for investment. Please, please, please get it into your head. Insurance is not for investment. And insurance is temporary. Insurance is temporary. I have insurance until what? Until I have money to cover those things. Once I have money saved up over here for my kids to go to college, I don't need insurance for that, right? Once I have money saved up over here and my home is paid for, or I have money in retirement to take care of my wife in case something should happen to me, I don't need insurance any longer. Insurance is to be temporary. It's not forever. All we're doing with insurance is purchasing something, and what we're telling the insurance company is, we think we're going to die. And what the insurance company is saying, I bet you don't. That's it. And here's the other thing that people will always say, well, how much life insurance should I have? And you can go and read books, 8 times your salary, 10 times your salary, all those kind of things like that. Here's what it is. If you die, you didn't have enough. Okay? However much you had, it wasn't enough. Okay? If you don't die, however much you had, it was too much. You shouldn't have wasted that money. You should have just kept it at home. But we don't know that, see? So what we do is we purchase insurance to replace income, cover our debts, college for our kids, until those things are done, until we have money to do those things. When I say money, any type of investment. It could be real estate. It could be our home. It could be anything. Remember what I said. If you got questions, you better throw a hand up because I'm going to keep going. Types of insurance. Types of insurance. There are basically two types of insurance, and there are only two types of insurance. You will hear insurance people tell you there are 15 different types of insurance, or hundreds of different types of insurance even. We're talking about life insurance in this case. There are basically two types. There are what's called cash value life insurance. Let me explain how cash value life insurance works. In the olden days, 30 years ago, cash value insurance used to be called whole life. And then in the 80s, they started coming out with universal life, things like that. Basically, here's what it is. It is permanent insurance, is the way the insurance company would sell it. It is permanent. In other words, you purchase it at a point in time, and you will have it forever. So here's what happens. You go out here and purchase an insurance plan, and I'm just using numbers, $100,000 life insurance plan, and it builds cash value in it. In other words, what it's doing is it's building a savings plan in that life insurance plan. And so as it builds a savings plan within that life insurance plan, time passes, and you're paying for it every single month. Well, here's the way it's sold to you. You don't want to pay $100 a month for the next 40 years and have nothing. If you will pay us $100 a month, what happens is this savings plan will build up over here in cash value so that 40 years from now, when you don't need the insurance any longer, you can cash it in and get your money out. You got your money back. So you got something out of it instead of getting nothing out of it, right? Sounds like a pretty good idea. That's what's called cash value insurance. Now, in most cases, and this is kind of a general statement here, this is not an always statement. Here's what happens, and don't want to get real technical with you, but here's what happens. With cash value insurance, you have life insurance and you have cash value. I'm using numbers. Cash value, life insurance, $100,000. It doesn't matter what that cash value is. When you pass away, that is the death benefit. The life insurance goes to your family, that $100,000. Now, I said in most cases, not in all cases. So here's what happens. You've got a plan over here, and it's got nothing in there. Well, you really don't care, right? Over years, that cash value builds up. There's $20,000, there's $30,000, there's $40,000, there's $50,000. You're $50,000 there. The death benefit is $100,000. When you die, how much is the company going to pay? $100,000. What happened to your 50? Here's what actually happened. They paid you 50, your 50, and they paid you another 50 of life insurance is what they did. They paid you your 100. How much life insurance did you really have? 50,000. Thank you very much. You had 50,000 is what you really had. You could have taken that $50,000 out and bought a $50,000 policy, and you'd still had $100,000. Now, the insurance company, as I said, back in the 80s, realized and went, "Ooh, people don't like this." And so they came out with Universal Life. And so what they'll do now is they'll start you on a plan where you don't get the cash value. You pass away, you don't get the cash value because there's nothing there. No big deal. But as it accumulates and starts building money, it gets $50,000. They'll change the plan so that when you pass away, it's $100,000. Plus, you go to option B or option 2 or whatever it is, you get the cash value. Now, got to get this in your head. If that happens, they're going to pay the $100,000 plus your $50,000, right, when someone passes away. How much life insurance do you have at that point in time? $100,000. Who pays for that? The insurance company didn't suddenly say, "Well, you've been with us for so long, we'll let you just have this. You're a good old boy." The insurance company's going to say, "You're going to pay for that $100,000. You're going to pay more premium. It's going to cost you more." Remember that couple I said at the very, very first? Their numbers were drastically different. Here's what they had. They had $500,000 worth of life insurance, $250,000 of money in their savings account. And I said, "Well, what, now wait a minute. You pass away, how much is the company going to pay?" $500,000. I said, "What happened to your $250,000? And she went, "Well, I guess they kept it." And I said, "That's right. So you had $250,000 worth of life insurance." And she said, "Well, I should change that." I said, "Well, that's up to you." I said, "I understand what's going to happen. When you change it, though, that premium that you were paying," which she wasn't paying anything, they were taking it out of her cash value, I said, "it's going to be more. Because now you've got $500,000 worth of insurance on top of the $250,000. The premium that they had been deducting was $3,700 a year, $300 a month, and it went to $17,000 a year. Cost a little more, didn't it, to change that option? That's one type of life insurance, cash value life insurance. Now, needless to say, for those of you who are thinking about going into the life insurance business, you hate people like me. Because I will tell you, do not buy cash value life insurance. Except for one reason, I'll come to it later. Examples of cash value life insurance, here's a 25-year-old. I just went to the internet, pulled this off the internet. A 25-year-old could get a universal life policy for $125 a month for it would have $500,000 worth of life insurance. Okay? $125 a month. $500,000 worth of life insurance. Okay? Sounds like a pretty good deal. Term insurance. Term insurance, of course, insurance companies are the ones who coined the phrase term, meaning temporary. And the way they tell you not to buy it is because it's only temporary, you're only going to have this temporary. You are correct. We only want it temporarily until when? Till my income is replaced, till I get the kids' colleges paid off, all those kinds. I don't want insurance after that. I'm done with it after that. I don't need it anymore after that. So it is term. I only want it for a period of time. You can buy term insurance that is what's called annual renewable term. It's renewable each and every year. You can buy a 5-year level term, 10-year level term, 20-year level term, probably 30-year level term nowadays. I can't do that anymore because I'm too old. but Let me give you an example here of a premium. Same thing. Same guy, 25 years old. A 20-year level term would be $20 a month for $500,000 worth of insurance. Now, this is not a makeup number. This is a real company that really does this. Okay. Now, what that means is for a 20-year period, every single month, he's going to pay $20 a month, $240 a year. $240 a year for the next 20 years. Do the math real quick. $240 a year, 20 years, that's how much? $4,800. Come on. $4,800 is right at $5,000. And you go, well, wait a minute. He paid $5,000. What did he get out of it? He didn't get anything out of it. He didn't die. He didn't get nothing, right? But if he died anywhere along the way, the company would have paid $500,000. Now, understand what the insurance salesman is going to come along and say. Why would you do that? Why would you just waste $5,000? What you could have done instead is paid the $125 a month, right? Paid the $125 a month, and at the end of that 20 years, you would have much, much more than $5,000. Here's the key. What if you, not the insurance company, what if you bought the term insurance one for paid $20 a month and you took $105 a month and saved it every month? $100 a month, 12 months, $1,200 a year, 20 years. Well, my goodness, that's $24,000. You've got, and it didn't earn anything. How much do you think the insurance company made off you? Okay? And so you see the numbers real quickly. It's real easy to see. Here's the key. If I don't, go back over here, save money systematically, emergency fund, investing money, IRA. If I don't do all that, how long am I going to have insurance? Forever, till I die, because I'll never have my income replaced. My wife will never be taken care of. The house probably never be paid off, all those things. I've got to have insurance forever. So I've got to do something. I've got to do these things. I've got to invest the money. If you did it for a 45-year-old, just to show you the difference here, a 45-year-old does 20 years. He buys a policy, a 20-year level term. The number on it was, what, $69 a month? $60 a month. $60 a month for a $500,000 policy for a 45-year-old. So you see, it's not, even if he, after 20 years, you go, well, yeah, but it'll cost him so much in 20 years. No, it'll cost him $60 a month when he's 45. So it's not that much more. All right, insurance is not an investment, here's the key, unless all other avenues are at their max. Now, here's what I mean. You've taken everything else that you can do. You've invested in all the IRAs, all the 401Ks, all the 403Bs, everything through work. You've invested everywhere you can, and there's still a tax problem. Because, see, you can put money into insurance plans, and the money accumulates non-taxable, just like it does with the IRAs. And so it is a place to do that if you've used up every one of the other avenues there is. You just don't see very many people like that. I'm not saying they're not out there. You just don't see very many. Lastly, or is if there is an estate tax problem. I'm not going to get into all that. But if there is an estate tax problem, which means basically you have an estate worth more than $4 million right now. If your estate's worth more than $4 million, then you ought to look at some types of life insurance that have longevity to them, that will be here forever, so that you can pay your family can pay their inheritance tax. What happened to my estate at death? And we'll cover this very quickly. What happens to my estate at death? In the state of Texas, we're assuming that if you have an estate, you're going to be married. You've been around for a long time. You have a spouse. In the state of Texas, it is no big deal to have the estate go from one spouse to the other spouse. It is no big deal. You really don't have to do anything. You do not have to do anything when the first spouse passes away. Everything goes to the second spouse. There's no inheritance taxes that have to be paid. Ross Perot can die. His entire estate will go to whoever it goes to. It could go to his wife, and she would not pay any inheritance tax or estate tax. Going from spouse to spouse, there are no taxes that are due, nothing. Okay? All your qualified monies, your IRAs, all those type of things can go to your spouse, stay there, not be taxable, all those things. So it's not a real big deal in Texas. Now, the only time it ever comes a big deal is if your spouse decides to sell something. You've got property. If you've got property and you've died and your name is still on there and you haven't done anything, then you may have to have your name removed off of it. There are forms that you can file at the courthouse to do that that are a minimal fee. When I say minimal fee, $100, things like that, to get your name off of them. It's called an affidavit of heirship. You don't need to remember all that stuff, but that's how it works. No spouse. That's when it becomes a problem. When the second spouse passes away, Okay? Your grandparents. Your grandfather dies, everything goes to your grandmother. Really no big deal. Okay? Sad your grandpa's gone, all those kind of things like that. But financially, it's not a big deal. It's when that second spouse passes away, it becomes a problem. Because here's what happens. The state of Texas says, you have a will. Either you have one, or we got one for you. Okay? But you have one. And so, the first thing that happened is there could be a will. Now, a will is a legal document that's written out that says, when I die, I want everything to go to Susie, whoever it is it's going to go to. Now, the problem that happens, of course, is you have to prove that. When I say prove that, that's what the probate process is. The probate process is a proving process. You're proving that you're who you're Susie. Number one, that there was a document that said he wanted it to go to Susie. And number two, that you are Susie. And so the court determines that. And so anytime the court determines something, understand what you've got to do. Have attorneys. And so if you have to have attorneys, you've got to pay them. Thank you. And so if you pay them, you got to pay them, you got to pay the court, all those things. It's a racket. That's really all it is. I mean, it'd be real simple for your estate to go to Susie and just be done, but it's a racket and it's not going to change. You have a will. A will says it goes to whoever it goes to, and you probate that, then it goes to whoever it's supposed to. But you've got to pay to do that. Now, there is no book that you open to say, okay, your estate is this size, and here's how much we charge you to do that. It's whatever the market will bear. Literally. It's whatever the market will bear. It's whatever they can do legitimately and cover themselves with that. I mean, I've seen attorneys charge little old ladies $20,000 for something that there was no way that they spent more than $1,000 on it. And the fee was $20,000 because she would pay it. And so it's just whatever the market will bear. So if you're thinking about something that you really want to do, be an attorney. Next one is revocable trust. Remember I said either you have a will or you don't have a will. If you don't have a will, the state has one for you. The only other choice you have is what's called a revocable trust. A revocable trust, and in the next 5 minutes, you'll know more about a trust than probably many attorneys do. A revocable trust does three things. It sets up three people. It sets up a trustor. A trustor is the person who owns the trust. That's real simple, right? What mom and dad don't want to do is give away their property. They don't want to give it to you because they're afraid you'll take it off and go to Tahiti with it or somewhere. Sell it all. And so they don't want to give it to you, but they don't want to have to go through probate. And so what they do is they set themselves up as trustor. When I say themselves, mom and dad both could be co-trustors, co-owners, co-settlors is what the legal term of it, or co-grantors. They own the trust. It's theirs. It'll always be theirs until it's distributed. Next thing it sets up is a trustee. And this is key. The trustee is the person who manages the trust. The trustee is the person who manages the trust. And I'm using mom and dad because, I don't know, I'm using mom and dad. Mom and dad own the trust. Mom and dad can manage the trust. Now, maybe mom's not real financial, and she doesn't want to have anything to do with that, and she doesn't want to manage anything. Well, it can be just dad. But here's the other thing the trust does. The trust allows you to manage everything that it owns, no matter when it is. Now, here's the big deal. What happens a lot of times, because I deal with older people all the time, is they'll have powers of attorneys, they'll have wills, things like that. As soon as mom or dad pass away, the power of attorney that whoever has is no longer valid. As soon as mom or dad pass away, the power of attorney is no longer valid. So what that means is, if their name's not, if the children's name or whoever's the beneficiary's name is not on their checking account, savings accounts, stock, bonds, all that kind of stuff, they have no access to those things. They can't get to the money. They can't write checks. They can't pay for the funeral, even, because the power of attorney no longer is any good. The trustee can act no matter when. Trustee can act before they passed away. Trustee can act after they pass away. It makes no difference. And so all that happens then is, I'll see this every week. Little ladies will come see me, and they have put their daughter on their checking account, their CDs, their stocks, their blah, blah, blah. Understand, when you put those children's names on those investments, they own them also. They own them also. They are theirs also. So that when that doctor in Arlington has his name on your $100,000 CD and he gets sued for malpractice and you call me on the phone and say, I'm getting sued for malpractice and my son's name is on my CD, what do I do? And I say, give him the $100,000 because they're going to take it. You shouldn't have put his name on there. She called me too late. If you'd have done it before this, if you'd have put them on there as a trustee, who owns the trust? Mom does. Not son. Not somebody else. The trustor owns it. The trustee is just managing it. And so they have no liability there. Very key there. Trustee manages the trust. Trustor owns it. Lastly, is the beneficiary. Beneficiary to the trust are mom and dad. It's whoever's alive. Whoever's alive, they're the ones who benefit from it. So they own it, they manage it, they benefit from it. At some point in time, they may not can manage it any longer. Well, then someone else is going to manage it. At some point in time, dad may die. Well, then mom's still there. She's the beneficiary. At some point in time, mom dies. Now we've got another beneficiary. Now, instead of us having to go to court, all we have to do is the trustee has to disperse the property to whoever the beneficiaries are. It can be one beneficiary. It can be seven boys up in Pilot Point. I just had one a week or so ago. It doesn't matter how many beneficiaries there are. And so you just write checks. Literally, it takes about 2 weeks to get through it. No cost involved whatsoever. You just do it. Now, what always happened here is people say, well, why wouldn't everybody get a trust instead of a will? Mainly because attorneys don't want them to get a trust instead of a will, because if you get a will, what are you going to do? You're going to come back and see the attorney later on. I always tell people it's like buying an insurance policy. You're going to come back. You're going to buy a will. You're going to come back later on. Well, who's going to probate dad's will? Well, who wrote it? Oh, well, is he still in business? Yeah. No, his son's taking over now. Okay. We'll go see him. And so it was just an insurance policy. With a trust, you never have to see the attorney again. So they're going to charge you more is the answer to the question. They're going to charge you more. And we went blank. So that means I have nothing else to say. All right. Live too long, die too soon. What happens to my estate? That's what we've covered. And he told me to quit at 8:15. It's almost that. You got 2 minutes to ask questions. We did such a great job. Nobody has a question whatsoever. If you have a question sometime, you want to call me, email me, see me after class. Go, Diane. How old are you, college or are you career? Okay. How do you set up a trust? Yeah, that was my first thought. How do you set up a trust? Any attorney, well, I shouldn't say that. Most any attorney could set up a trust for you. Most any attorney can set up a trust. There are several people in the church that I have given trust to, I guess is a good way to say it. I don't tell that to everybody, and I hesitate to say that, and I probably shouldn't say it just then because I don't want my phone ringing all the time. Yeah, you would call me. but you could go to any attorney and set up a trust. Typically, an attorney in the market today, you're probably looking at, on the high side, $1,500, on the low side, $1,000. That's typically what they would charge to set up a trust for you. If you went to an attorney to do a will, he'd probably charge you $100. I mean, that's not probably, I had one the other day charge a lady $500 for a two-page document, but he shouldn't have done that. But that's pretty normal. Nothing. Because it's a revocable trust, because what we're talking about here is what's called an inter vivos trust. It's the grantor's Social Security number, and it's just whatever tax bracket he's in. There is no, it's not like an irrevocable trust. Irrevocable trust, doesn't happen. We didn't talk about estate taxes at all. Well, the big change that's coming up is concerning estate taxes, is the big change. It's up to $2 million. Remember I said earlier, unless your estate's more than $4 million, you don't have to worry. It's $2 million per person, husband and wife. And so if you set up a trust, you can literally protect $4 million. Now, if you hadn't set up a trust, all you can protect is $2 million. And so once that first spouse passes away, you lost his $2 million. You can only protect $2 million for her. That is subject to change in 2012 to nada, which means the... Here's what happens now. It's what's called a marital deduction. The tax is still there. It's still there. You just don't pay it because you're under $2 million. But as soon as it goes to nothing after 2012, then you would start paying taxes. And the tax rate on it is 45 right now, 45% of your estate. Remember I said, spouse to spouse, no tax, no estate tax. Only spouse to children, estate tax. But use an example. Even if you have a house in this area that, you know, it's $500,000 and you've got a couple hundred thousand dollars in the bank, that's $700,000. And I die and it goes to my kids and I got to pay 45% of that taxes. Whoa! That means they pretty much got to sell that house, whether they want to or not. Doesn't matter what the market is, they got to sell it. So, yeah, that's a big deal coming 2012. And they've already said, some of the candidates have already said they are not. They call it the death tax, is what some people will call it, and the other ones will call it the tax on the rich, because anybody's got more than $2 million must be rich, and so some will call it the death tax, others will call it whatever they do. Anything else? Very quickly. Stay with mom and dad as long as you can. Get a job. Yeah, they want to start saving. They want to start the systematic. Get you an emergency fund built up, because I don't care if you're working at Pizza Hut, you know, making whatever you're making at Pizza Hut, or if you're working at some, you know, Fidelity or wherever. It doesn't matter. You can lose that job, whether it be at Pizza Hut or somewhere else. And so if you hadn't got some money in emergency fund, you will be back with mom and dad. And if you don't want to go back with mom and dad, you better get some money there. And if mom and dad don't want you to come back, you better make sure you get some money there. Yes? Right. Mm-hmm. Right. There's still principles there. Mm-hmm. Right. But I wouldn't want to save at the expense of not paying my bills. In other words, I just go, I'm not going to pay my bills because I got to save this money. I'm not going to pay my bills. Well, no, I have an obligation to pay the bill because I bought it on time, or I did, you know, I charged it, or whatever I did. I wouldn't use the term discretionary income, though, because that's what happens with everybody. What happens is we have no discretionary income. Well, yeah, you did. You just didn't cut anything. So what you've got to do, especially when you're first getting married, you've got to cut. If you don't cut, there'll never be any discretionary income, because you'll have a baby, then you'll have two babies, then you'll have four babies. And you know, it never happens then. And you know, the scripture that comes to mind is, you don't want to be a burden to the church. I mean, you know, he that doesn't provide for his own is worse than an infidel. I mean, if you don't provide for your family, who's going to take care of them then? It comes to the church then. And we don't want to do that. So certainly don't want to violate scripture there. Anything else? What do I do? I pray, and then we're done? Okay. Gracious Father, we come before you this evening, Father. We've presented these principles, Father, concerning investments and insurances and things. And Father, we do want to be mindful, Father, of your word and the principles that are laid out there for us. Father, we certainly don't want to do anything that would cause you to be grieved, Father, because we've done something that we shouldn't have. Father, we want to honor you in everything that we do, including the areas of finance. Father, we would ask you to help each one of these young men and women, Father, to take these principles, apply them to their lives, not so that they become something that they feel like they have to do because of anything but honoring you, Father. All we want them to do is honor you with their life, with every area of it, Father. And so we pray, Father, that you would give them wisdom, you would give them discernment, Father, as they look for mates. We would ask you to help them find mates that will apply biblical principles to their life. And Father, we pray all this in your Son's name. Amen. I'll give you an example, and it's not a personal example, but you young guys are going to be, hopefully one of these days, maybe a long time for some of you, maybe a real long time for some of you, are going to find a mate. Maybe you grew up in a household that they never charged anything. Mom and Dad never had credit cards. They never used credit cards. They never bought new cars. You know, they bought them and paid cash for them, bought used cars, all this kind of stuff. And that's how you grew up. And you meet Susie. And Susie never seen a credit card she didn't like. And that's the way her family lived. And Susie charged everything. That's what her family, you know, they wanted a new car. They went and got a new car. She saw a new dress. She put it on the credit card. That's just the way Susie grew up. You need to be prepared for that. And it's the same way for you ladies. I mean, if it's vice versa. If you're Susie, shame on you. Don't let them find out that you're Susie if you're Susie, okay? Hide it. You understand what I'm saying? You need to make sure that the guy or girl that it is that you're coming in touch with, that you're looking at, has those same types of convictions that you have. Because if you don't, there will be some battles that go on, okay? And understand, guys, you can win those battles. I can give you an example of guys who married girls who were high maintenance, and they still won. Still a battle, but they won. That's all. You're dismissed.